Okay, we're ready to start. Okay, we do a one-time homage to the Buddha. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Today is March 16th, 2015. And we are doing new course in reading Pali, about to start lesson 10. So we'll start with the grammar. So here we have section on the genitive absolute. Okay, I'm going to share the screen with the people. Because I have a little file on absolutes, which I had sent earlier. I made this available to everybody. Okay, so earlier we had the locative absolute in lesson 8. And now we come to something called the genitive absolute. First I'll see what the text says, then I'll go through some of my examples. Okay, the construction is similar to that with the locative, except that the participle and its subject, if present, will both be in the genitive case. The subject of the absolute and the participle will agree in case, number, and gender. And the subject will be different from the subject of the main sentence. With a past participle, the construction indicates an action prior to the main clause. So they give just one example here. Okay, achira pakkantasa bhagavato ayankata udapadi. So achira means not long after. Pakanta means left, departed. And this is, you can see it's in the genitive singular, masculine, because it's describing bhagavato. So not long after the Blessed One had left, this discussion arose. Okay, they give only one example, but I collected a bunch of examples. We could see the difference between the genitive absolute and the locative absolute. The way I would explain the difference, and I haven't tested this out empirically by looking for a lot of examples. See how to put this. In the locative absolute, there is a subject and an action occurring in the secondary clause, and the subject and the action in the secondary clause don't have a strong relationship with the subject and action of the primary clause. Let's take some examples. Okay, this will show the locative absolute using the past participle. So evang samahite chite parisude pariyodate asavanang kaya jnanaya chitang abhi ninameti. Okay, so you see the subject of the secondary clause here is chitta. And to indicate that it's a subordinate clause, it occurs in the locative. So it has the meaning like when or while. In this case, when his mind was thus concentrated. You see, samahite is a past participle describing chitte, mind. His mind was concentrated, parisuddhe, purified, also a past participle, pariyodate, cleaned, cleansed, another past participle. So these three words, samahite, parisuddhe, pariyodate, are describing chitte, which is the subject of the secondary clause. And so this is a dependent clause or subordinate clause, and the main clause is the subject is so, he, chit abhininameti, which means to direct, to bend. And here the object is chitang. He bends his mind. Asavanan kaya jnanaya. He bends his mind to knowledge of the destruction of the asavas, the influxes. Okay, here's another example, locative absolute. Evang swakate bhikkhave maya dhamme udane vivatte pakasite chinapi lotike. Okay, that's all the subordinate clause. Make a little division here. Then yesang bhikkhunang tini sangyojanani pahinani sabete sotapanna. Okay, so we're saying when the Dhamma has been well expounded by me. So here the subject of the secondary clause is Dhamma, which occurs in locative and is described as swakate, well proclaimed, utane, clear, vivate, opened up, pakasite, revealed, china pilotike, stripped of padding. So this is all a secondary clause. Then the primary clause, for which monks, for those monks for whom the three fetters are abandoned, all those are stream enterers. So you can see these are all locatives, but they're not functioning as locatives in the sense of the place where something is happening. The locative is used just to show that this is a secondary clause. It's like in English, when we form the secondary clause, we say, when such and such is the case, or if such and such is the case, then that follows. So in Pali, instead of using a word like when, they just put everything in the secondary clause, all the subject and its qualifiers into the locative case. Okay, here's a locative. In these examples, the locatives, the descriptive locatives are past participles or adjectives. Here are two examples in which the descriptive term is a present participle. So here we have salayatane ko sati paso hoti. And the word sati here, this is the present participle locative of the verb ati, which means to be. You see, the verb ati comes from the root sat. And so this forms its past participle. In the nominative singular, it would be santo. But in the locative, it comes out to be sati. And then salayatana, of course, is the six sense bases, or the sixfold sense base. So this is saying, when there is the sixfold sense base, or when the sixfold sense base exists, paso hoti, then contact comes to be. Do you see this? So secondary clause in the locative, primary clause, nominative subject. Okay, another example with the present participle. Imasmin chapana vayakaranasmin banyamane tingsamatanang bikunang anupadaya asavehi chitani vi muchingsu. Okay, so here the subject is vayakarana, which means explanation, exposition, an exposition of the Dhamma. Then this is the pronoun, imasmin, vayakaranasmin, this exposition. And then banyamane, this is passive, present participle, locative case from the verb bunati. Bunati means to speak. And so it gives us the passive form, bunyati, to be spoken. And then it would give, in the nominative, we would get the present participle, banyamana, or that's the stem form in the nominative, with a neuter noun, it would be banyamanang. But now this is describing vayakaranasmin, So it becomes locative, banyamane, being spoken. So while this explanation was being spoken for the 30 monks, their minds, or the minds of the 30 monks, were freed from the asavas through non-clinging. Yeah, so just to wrap up. And so you could see the secondary clause, the subject is vayakarana, which occurs locative singular, vayakaranasmin. It has the pronoun imang, which becomes imasmin. And then it has, it's described by the present participle in the locative, banyamane. So while this explanation was being spoken, the minds of the 30 monks were freed from the asavas. Yeah?
My question is, the primary clause is always nominative, and then the secondary clause is always locative?
I say as a general rule. I'm always hesitant to say always, since if I say always, sometimes the general rule is that the subject of the primary clause is nominative. Yeah, I think we could say that. Okay, now we come to the genitive absolute, and you'll see the difference in that the way I see it, is that in the genitive absolute, the secondary clause seems to have a closer connection to the subject of the main clause. Let's look at some examples which might make it clear. Okay. So the way it seems to work with the genitive absolute is that something is happening to the subject. The subject is in the nominative, but something is happening to the subject, so that the subject is somewhat in a passive role in relation to what is happening to him. And what is happening is described by another clause in which the subject is in the genitive, and words that describe it are also genitive. Okay, so here we have... Okay, ayoni so manasi karoto anupana cheva asava upajanti. Okay, that should be enough, actually. We don't need to make it simple. We could take this out. Okay. So here you see, I should actually say that here, maybe we make a distinction, the grammatical subject and the subject in terms of the meaning. The grammatical subject is in the nominative. So here the grammatical subject are the asavas, the influxes. So the influxes arise. So that's the main clause. Anupana cheva asava upajanti. Unarisen asavas arise. But they're arising to what I would call a passive subject, one who is attending or reflecting carelessly. So for one who is reflecting carelessly, see, that's the secondary clause. And this is in the genitive. genitive singular. So for one who is attending carelessly, then comes the main clause, unarisen asavas arise. And then the counterpart, for one who is attending carefully, unarisen asavas do not arise. You see, the connection here between the asavas and the person is closer. So it's when the person is reflecting carelessly that the asavas arise. And so person who's reflecting is put in the genitive absolute. Maybe because manase karoto is a participle, let's just make it okay, so here we could say, instead of using the general one, when a monk is reflecting carelessly, unarisen asavas arise. And when a monk is reflecting carefully, unarisen asavas do not arise. So here you see the subject is, well, let's say, of the secondary clause is the monk who's put in the genitive, and then he's described by the present participle, manase karoto, reflecting, either ayoniso, unwisely, or yoniso, wisely. Maybe before I ask for questions, we'll take a look at a few other examples. Okay, we'll take this example here, this one. Okay, tassa che kula putassa evang udahato gatato vayamato te boga na abini pajanti so sochati kilamati paridevati urataling kandati samohang apajati. Okay, so here we have the genitive absolute clause. So the subject here is Kula Puta. It's a young man or son of good family, described as Tassa, that son of good family. Then we have Che, means if. Then we have the words Ud. These are based on verbs udahato, udahato, to be striving, gatato, we say struggling, vayamato, making effort, or laboring. And you could see these are all genitive, all present participles in the genitive singular. So we would translate, while that son of good family, thus is striving, is struggling, is making effort, those wealths or those goods are not acquired, do not come to him, then he sorrows, he grieves, he laments, he weeps, beating his breast, and he becomes confused. Okay, here's a very simple example. Okay, tassa evang janato evang pasato kamasava pi chitang vimuchati. Again, to make it easier to follow, we'll put in bhikkhuno. So that we have a clear subject. So, of that monk, for that monk, thus knowing, thus seeing, the mind is freed from the asava of sensual desire. So you see, this is the secondary clause. When that monk knows thus, sees thus, then the primary clause. Here the subject is the nominative singular, chitang. The mind is freed. And kamasava is what case? Say it.
Ablative?
Right, it's the ablative case. It has the meaning from, ablative singular, from the asava or influx of sensuality.
Chitang is nominative?
Chitang is nominative. The thing is, chitang is a neuter noun, so in the singular, both singular and plural, the nominative and the accusative look the same. It's chitang, whether it's nominative, accusative, it's chitang. If it's plural, it's chitani. But from the context, we could figure out whether it's nominative subject or accusative object. So here we have the verb vimuchati is freed. So we have to see what is freed. So chitang vimuchati, the mind is freed. Whereas in an earlier sentence, okay, just take this part. Asavanang kaya jnanaya chitang abhininameti. Here we have so, which is, we can see so means he, that is the subject. So he bends or directs chitang. So here the word looks the same, chitang, but the verb, it's an active verb, bends or directs. So chitang is the object of that, so it's accusative. Okay, we take one more example. Okay, bhikkhuno appamattassa atapino pahitattassa viharito avimuttang ceva chitang vimuchati anuttarang yoga kemang anupabunati. Okay, so the secondary clause here is put in the genitive absolute. When a monk, bhikkhuno, this is the subject in the genitive, when a monk, then viharato means living, dwelling. When the monk is living, then upamatasa, heedful, atapino, ardent, pahitatasa, resolute, then avimutang cheva chitang, his unliberated mind is liberated, and anuttarang yoga kemang anupapunati, and he attains the supreme security from the bonds. So you could see how all of this is describing the monk who's the subject of the secondary clause, and then the main clause tells what happens to him when he's in such a condition. Then here we have, these are all with the present participle forms. Then here we have a past participle type. This is actually similar to the one in the book. Achira pakantasa cha kokalikasa bhikkhuno. Sasapa matihi pilakahi. Sabo kayu puto ahosi. So this was a monk who slandered Sariputta and Moggallana. He tried to defame them. And so it says, again, we have the same word as in the textbook, achira pakanta. Not long after the monk Kokalika had left. So this is the secondary clause with Kokalika as the subject. Then the primary clause is subokayo, the whole body, and is described as puto, which means covered. It became covered by pilakahi. These are like boils, which are the size of sasapa, that's a mustard seeds. What case? Sasapa matihi pilakahi?
Instrumental.
Right, good. Instrumental case. So his whole body became covered with boils the size of mustard seeds.
I have a question.
Yeah.
It's about maybe the sutra. Because he slandered these monks?
Yeah, this was the kind of his karma of his ripening.
Oh, okay.
Then the boils get bigger and bigger and then he dies.
They wouldn't have been stripped of padding in the previous verse.
I think we'd have to go and sort of look at the explanation, the commentary. I think what's said is that, like, a teaching which is defective or imperfect, you know, you have to sort of cover up the faults by putting padding over it. But it said the Buddha's Dharma, you know, everything holds together consistently, so you don't have to patch it up. Maybe using like say, it's not a patched up teaching. So any questions about this absolutes. Again, we just have, you know, it's mainly a matter of coming across them in reading and then getting familiar with them. Abstract explanations are not as helpful as practical examples.
Manas, I
should have
checked, but
Manasikaroti
is a verb?
Manasikaroto.
It's a verb?
Yeah, there's the verb Manasikaroti, which means to reflect, to consider. Any other questions? So let's go on then in the textbook, going back to the textbook. Wow, there's a lot of grammar in this chapter. Okay, actually this we've already covered, sati and santi and locative absolutes. Okay, so the verb is ati, to exist, to be. It has the present participle santa. That's the stem form. And this has two locative forms, sati and sante, both with the same meaning, when such exists, when such is the case. So in the locative absolute, sati is most often used. And this sati has no relation to the word sati meaning mindfulness. They're completely different. But sante appears when the sense is impersonal. That is, I think it occurs maybe only in the expression evang sante, when such is the case, that being the case. Okay, now we come back to the gerund. We've already had the gerund, but now they're just saying that a number of examples occur in the present reading. Note that they can be chained, that is, connected in a series, to express a sequence of actions prior to the main verb. Okay, they give one passage as an example. Eka iti putang adaya muka dovanataya panditasa pokaraning gantva putang nahapetva atano sanake nisidapetva mukang dovitva nahatung otari. Okay, eka iti means one woman, putang adaya, having taken her son, muka dovanataya, for the purpose of washing the face, panditasa pokaraning ganva, having gone to the wise man's lotus pond, putang nahapetva, having bathed her son, atano sanake nisidapetva, having made him sit down, on her own garment. Mukang dovitva, having washed her face. Nahatung otari, entered to bathe, entered the pond to bathe. So here we see Adaya, Gantva, Nahapetva, Nisidapetva, Dovidva. Was it five or six gerunds are used in order to indicate a series of actions? It's like in English, when we want to indicate a series of actions, we use a primary verb and we just connect them by using a comma. Okay. The boy took money from his mother, went to the store, bought a cart of milk, a carton of milk, went to the bakery, bought a loaf of bread, and then returned home. So we just use the main verb and we just create a chain by using commas. But in Pali, you wouldn't use the main verb, but you string them together by using the gerund. So the boy, having taken money from his mother, having gone to the grocery, having bought a carton of milk, having gone to the bakery, having bought a loaf of bread, returned home. Any questions? Again, we'll see examples of that in the reading. Okay, a present or past participle with its appropriate objects, adverbs, may modify a preceding noun or a following noun. Usually it's the noun. If there's a series of descriptive terms, the first one comes before the noun and the others come after the noun. Like in this example here, we have swakate maya dhamme. So the subject here is dhamme, the teaching, the dhamma. The first descriptive term, swakate, comes in front of it, and then the other descriptive terms come after it. Utane, clear, vivate, opened up, pakasite, revealed, chinapilotike, stripped of padding. Or in this case, the first one here, we have samahite chitte parisude pariyodate. So the subject is chitte, the mind, and the first term to describe it comes in front of it, concentrated, samahite. But the other descriptive terms come after it, parisude, purified, pariyodate, cleaned. Okay, so this says, a present or past participle with its appropriate objects, adverbs, etc., may modify a preceding noun or a following noun. The participle and the noun will agree in number, case, and gender. And the construction may have the sense of an English relative clause, particularly when the participle follows the noun. Okay, so here we have Sila Sampano Puriso, a man who is endowed with virtue. So endowed with virtue is Sila sampanno, and that's describing the man, puriso. And the next one we have chitang dantang mahato vataya sangvatati, a mind that is tamed leads to great benefit. Okay. And this section should actually have, in my edition, they didn't have a number here, so I had to write it in. It should have the number 4 before a present or past participle. Should write in the number 4 in front of the, if they didn't correct it in the second edition. Okay, now continuing to the next page. A participle may also follow the object of a verb with a meaning like see or hear, to form the equivalent of an English construction like I saw him going or I saw him seated there. So they give an example. Some people are saying anandang gacchantang udasama. So udasama, what kind of verb is this? What is this called? The form of the verb? What is it? No.
Past participle.
Not past?
Future.
What?
Future participle.
No, no. Notice, oh, it's a little bit, it's unusual for, it doesn't conform to the model that you've had. What form is it? June?
The aorist?
Right, it's the aorist, or past tense of the verb. I'm wondering whether we had this, a model of this kind of verb before. Yeah, you find the paradigm of this on page 86. This is called the aorist of the adasa type. So you could see that first person plural, one way to end it is with ama. So this is adasama, we saw. So we saw anandang. So what case is anandang here?
Accusative.
Right, it's the accusative. And then gacchantang is the present participle describing anandang. So it's also accusative singular. We saw Ananda going.
So what makes it past participle? The ama? Ama makes it.
Did I say past participle?
No.
No, it's present participle.
Past tense.
Gacchantang. He was going. Okay, then another example given is Bhagavantang ekang rukasa mule nisinang disva. So having seen, then we have Bhagavantam. Is what case is this?
Accusative.
Right, it's the accusative, the blessed one. Then the blessed one, or Buddha, is described by Nisinam, sitting. So having seen the blessed one seated, then or Ekang should be alone, or I think it should be, actually, I think there's actually a mistake here. It should be Bhagavantam Ekasa Rukasa Mule Nisinang Disva. Having seen the Blessed One sitting at the root of one tree, of a certain tree.
Right. I was going to ask you whether that Ekang goes for the tree or goes for the Buddha, or the blessing.
The way it's here, the way it's printed here, Ekang, then it would go with the Buddha alone, having seen the Buddha alone seated at the foot of a tree. But I think, if I remember in the reading passage, it actually goes with Rukasa. Yeah, we'll come to it with the first reading passage in the third line. So I think that's just a typographical mistake. Okay, the next paragraph I don't really understand. I just take it very simply and naturally. Okay, Daruni Pakipanto Jalesi. So there's a subject here. It would be so, he, throwing, Daruni is pieces of firewood, throwing firewood there, he kindled or started the fire. Okay, let's go on. Okay, now we come to future participle in Nia. Okay, this is what's called the future passive participle or optative participle, meaning something that should be done, that could be done, that must be done. So we had future participles ending in tabba, ya, and niya in lesson 7. And some verbs may have more than one of these endings. For example, the verb karoti, which means to do or to make, has several forms. Karaniya, what should be done. Kataba, also what should be done. Kataba, what should be done. And there's another form, kicha, which takes on the meaning of duty or task. So these forms, especially with the niya ending, may be used as nouns with the sense that which should undergo the action of the verb. For example, pujaniya is that which, or those who should be worshipped. So we have in the Mangala Sutta, Pujacha Pujaniyanam Etang Mangalam Uttamam. Okay, that's one example. Another is Khadaniya, which originally meant that which can be eaten, comes to take on the meaning of food. Paniyang means that which can be drunk, takes on the meaning of drinking water. Paribhojaniyam, that which can be used in connection with water, takes on the meaning of water that should be used for other purposes besides drinking. So we sometimes have the compound or combination paniyam, paribhojaniyam. So paniyang is drinking water, and paribhojaniyang is water for other purposes, for washing, for bathing, for washing dishes.
Bante, the rice is buncha in the Pali.
Excuse me?
The rice. Eating the rice.
He says rice bunja. Does bunja mean rice?
Bhojaniyang.
Bhojaniyang.
Yeah, Bhojaniyang is, again, Bhojaniyang means what can be eaten.
Okay. So inducing in a future participle?
It's originally the future passive participle, that which should be eaten, that which can be eaten. But it takes on the special meaning.
Like, let me ask you, Bhante, are you eating or not something?
No.
Khadaniya.
Khadaniyang means what should be eaten. It means a thing that can be eaten.
Oh.
Bhojaniyang also means what can be eaten. That's the original meaning, but then they come to take on the meaning of food, different kinds of food. So Bhojaniyang, within Indian culture, Bhojaniya means rice, wheat, corn, fish, well, not for monks and nuns, but fish, meat, other types of grain, whereas everything else, vegetables, fruits, sweets, is called khadaniyang.
It should be eaten.
What is it?
These fruits and vegetables should be eaten.
Yeah, of course.
And you'll be healthy.
Yeah, here we have, actually the Burmese have I prefer the Sinhalese version. This is from the Mangala Sutta, Pujacha Pujaniyanang. So this is veneration to those worthy of veneration. So you see, this is future passive participle, which then comes to represent the noun, those who are worthy of veneration. Okay, next come cause. Any questions on this? Again, I just will point them out when we come across them in the reading. Okay, now we come to causative verbs. Okay, many different verbs are related to each other by being derived from the same root. Okay, so these are pairs of, call these normal verbs and causative verbs. So the simple verb, oterity, means to enter or to descend into. And then from this verb, we can form a causative, otareti, which means to make descend, to cause to enter, or to put under. Then we have the verb aharati, which means to bring. And then from this we get a causative, aharapeti, to cause to bring. I actually had another file here with. Okay, put it back there. Okay, so this was actually based on, we had the causative verbs in the Pali Primer by Lily De Silva. So this was based on that lesson 23 in that book, but we just repeat it. Okay, so the causative verbs are formed by adding e, aya, ape, apaya to the root or verbal base, and sometimes the vowel in the root is strengthened when these suffixes are added. And to strengthen the vowel, this means that in ordinary verb with a short A, the A will become long in the causative. For example, we have pachati, which means to cook. So to make it causative, it becomes pacheti, to make cook. The regular verb karoti, to do. The causative, kareti, to make do. And if the U is strengthened, it can turn into an O. So we have bunchati, to eat. And then we get, if we make the causative, we have bojati, to cause to eat, to feed. Okay, here are some examples of creating a causative verb. Okay, marati means to die when someone dies. Marati is the causative, to cause to die. In other words, to kill. And then there's a stronger causative, marapeti, which means to get somebody else to kill. So if I mareti somebody else, I kill him myself. I cause him to die. But if I say, you go kill him, then I am marapeti. I'm causing the person to be killed. Okay, here we have the verb ramati, which means to enjoy. Then from this we form a causative, rameti, which means to give enjoyment. And notice the A is strengthened. It turns into a long A. And we have the causative form, E, rameti. So to give delight, to give enjoyment to another person. And then we have the stronger causative, ramapeti. And this is to cause somebody else to give enjoyment. So here the example is that the king maybe instructs the dancing girls to give delight to the prince in order to keep him from thinking of renunciation. Let's just see some of the examples they give in the textbook. Okay, they give authority is to descend, and then otareti is to cause to descend, to lower, to make go down. Jalati means to burn. Jalati is to cause to burn. In other words, to light a fire. Pavatati is to roll or to occur. Pavatati is to cause to roll, to set in motion, to start something. Okay, some special forms. Okay, we have the verb titati, which means to stand or to exist. Then the causative form based on this is tapeti, which has originally the meaning is to cause to stay, but it takes on the meaning of to put or to place, to put down, to place. Then we have the verb dati or dadati, one gives. The causative form is dapeti, to cause to give. For example, I instruct somebody, you give food, you give alms to the ascetic. So that would be dapeti. Okay, turn over. So this is a still stronger form of the causative with ape. So nisidati is to sit. Nisidapeti is to cause to sit. In other words, to offer a seat, to invite to sit. Please have a seat. That's nisidapeti. To speak is vadati, to make somebody speak. Vadapeti, you should give a talk. You should speak up. Vadapeti. I don't want to go into any more grammatical explanations. Let's take, wow, 2:20.
Let's take an hour break.
No, we'll take a 10-minute break, then we'll do some reading. Okay, so we come back at 2:30. Sorry for all this grammar.